So welcome, everyone. I hope that you're having a great and fun morning. Is everybody enjoying the conference thus far? Yes?
Awesome. Great.
I'm Angie Frazier, head of Vision and Brand at MyWorth, powered by Penn Mutual, and I'm going to be your session MC for today. And I'm really thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders across the state and to support them in this community. You know, Penn Mutual continues to sponsor events like these because we know that women are seeking deeper connections with organizations and causes that they care about. Penn Mutual's long history of serving the needs of women, their families, and businesses has led to the launch of a new company, MyWorth, that will bridge the confidence gap between women and their money, providing the education, tools, and resources to navigate all of life's moments with clarity and peace of mind. I encourage you to join our circle of women at myworthfinance.com. With Penn Mutual's home being right here in the Philadelphia area, we are once again proud to be the 2018 sponsor, one of the sponsors, for the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. Thank you for participating in the breakout session, Getting Paid for What You're Worth. We have an amazing hour in store for you. First, I would like to introduce Claire Wasserman. Claire is a community builder and an advocate for women in the workplace. She founded Ladies Get Paid, an organization that gives women the tools and support they need to advance up in their careers. In less than 18 months, Ladies Get Paid has grown to more than 30,000 members from all 50 states and more than 60 countries. Wow, that's impressive, Claire. Ladies Get Paid is also having a conference in New York on December 8th. Claire is a frequent speaker and instructor at companies like the New York Times, Dropbox, and American Express, and she's currently touring the country hosting town halls for women to ask about self-worth, working, and getting paid. Please put your hands together and welcome Claire Wasserman.
So I came down from New York this morning. I took the Acela Express, and I get on the train, and it is so many men in business suits. And then I walked in here. It was like, oh, thank God. Just like the energy. I also enjoy in spaces like this when all the security guards are around, they're like kind of startled. There's so many women. I'm like, yep. I would love you all to do something for me. It is something that is very important. So I'm going to have you all introduce yourself to the person to your right and to your left, but hold on, there's a trick here. After that, I want you to actually introduce them to each other. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to do it, and everybody always gets really loud, which is awesome, but then I have to like scream, and it's very embarrassing for me. So when you see me put my hand up, do your best to shut up. Thank you. Okay, introduce yourself and then introduce them, right and left. Okay. It's always fun to do that.
That's cool.
In women's groups, too, because then the voice is, yeah. Because people always just introduce them like themselves, and they don't realize that sort of the power of connection comes from not just who you know, but who your friends are. If you can hear my voice, clap once. If you can hear my voice, clap twice. If you can hear my voice, clap three times. If you can hear my voice, clap four times. If you can hear my voice, clap five times. You guys are doing it too well, so now you're gonna be quiet. And thank you for that applause. That made me feel better. So the reason I had you all do that is because the power of your network is not actually who you know, right? It's actually who your network knows. So when you meet people here today, right, introduce yourself, you know, trade business cards, but ask them, what do you need? What can I do to support you? And immediately start thinking, who in your network can you introduce them to? Right? And then you'll end up creating this amazing kind of boomerang network, right, where you're making connections for people. And then opportunities will now bounce back to you. And it might feel like fate or karma, but you actually set it up that way. And it's really as simple as connecting people. who can help each other. And I think that's, I mean, that's important because we're at a conference, but I think that that's important in terms of salary negotiation, because how the heck are you going to figure out how much to charge, right? Online, fine, but it's really actually talking to other people. Where are you going to get your next job opportunities? It could be applying online, but it'll probably come from an introduction. So this is crucial, and I have made my entire career on it and making connections. Other question for you before we officially get started is, how much is the wage gap? Just shout it out for me.
30%.
Okay. So I usually get 78 cents to the dollar, and it's not. For many, many women, if you are a black woman, you are making 68 cents to the dollar. And if you are a Hispanic woman, you are making 55 cents to the dollar. Yeah. I learned that about 2 years ago, and that was the statistic that got me so depressed that I eventually, you know, the sort of the depression turned into anger, and then the anger became kind of the fuel to begin something, to begin Ladies Get Paid. And I also was embarrassed. I have to admit that I didn't know that statistic. And I'm an educated person, and I had a lot of shame that I didn't know these things. But once you learn this stuff, you can't unlearn it. And so then the question, of course, becomes, well, what, as an individual, can I possibly do to combat something that's so systemic, so overwhelming? And that's where the depression comes in. And that's when I had a realization that salary negotiation was actually a great way for us as an individual, for me as an individual, to have some kind of say, some kind of agency in my career. And I'm not saying we're going to close the wage gap by negotiating, but it helps, right? If I get a raise and you get a raise and you get a raise and I have like an Oprah moment, if you all get raises, the closest I'm going to get to Oprah. If we each get raises, right, collectively, we are closing the gap, removing the needle. That being said, I do want you all to know, you know, the burden should not be on us who are already underpaid and exhausted. We need to get our companies to meet us halfway. We need to get our public policy to do the right thing when it comes to helping women get the pay that they deserve. And so remember that when you go in to negotiate, yes, you were doing it for yourself, but you're really doing it for all of us. And I firmly believe we all have a responsibility to do that. So when you go in to negotiate, just channel this room. Think about all these people here. And remember, A, you're not alone in however you feel when you negotiate, which for most of us is feeling like I'm going to vomit. I still do. I teach salary negotiation, and I'm still nervous about it. So do recognize that even from this panel, you'll learn skills, right? And you're going to apply them. But it'll be a lifelong journey of deeply believing in your self-worth and then articulating it to another person. And that's, we're always growing and learning from that. So also don't be too hard on yourself. That being said, no pressure on us to get everybody to make thousands and thousands of more dollars. And you'll have our emails and hopefully you can stay in touch with us and tell us if this worked. And then again, we get to feel good about ourselves that we helped you. So I'm gonna just read quickly bio, then I'll talk about an overview of the structure of today, and then we'll just get into it. I'm going to speak fast. So we're going to start with Selena. Selena is a recognized consultant, speaker, and author on women in leadership, a seasoned human capital consultant, and you'll have to talk about what human capital means. Selena uses workplace culture assessments to help corporate clients be more inclusive and welcoming to women. She's also the author of two leadership books targeted at professional women, Push Back, How Smart Women Ask, and Stand Up for What They Want. She also has a book called The Next Generation of Women Leaders. So for obvious reasons, Selena's on this panel. Like, just do a reading. Just bring your book, which I believe you're also selling later.
Right, that's correct.
So get her paid. Okay. Please buy things from other women, too. Buy products from other women. Joyce is next to me. So Joyce is the Helen and William O'Toole Dean of the Villanova School of Business. She is a licensed industrial and organizational psychologist. So you'll also talk about what does organizational psychologist mean. And she has more than 25 years of experience consulting with both private and public sector organizations. So her expertise is primarily in the area of leadership and management development, negotiation tactics, executive coaching, and change management. And so I imagine we're all a range of industries and levels of career, and so I would love to hear from you about lots of things, but particularly for women who are at the top or who are upper middle management getting into the top.
Sure.
Because sometimes we assume once you're at the top, that's sort of it. But we're always, you know, we're constantly negotiating. And then Mary is at the end. She's the president of CareerStone Group, which is a full-service organizational and leadership development consultancy that delivers leading-edge talent and organizational development solutions to business and government. So many organizational words. I'm glad I'm... Wow, I'm
so
glad...
So many problems there.
Yeah. Mary's expertise lies in helping clients create dynamic and productive workplaces that foster professional and personal excellence and growth. She is the author of Managing Up, How to Move Up, Win at Work, and Succeed with Any Type of Boss. Mary, we also realized that we have a committee in D.C. that hosts events on a regular basis, and Mary said she'd been a speaker. I said, how'd it go? I hope it went well, because I don't organize these.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's our committee.
You were the first group that had my book came out. You're the first group that had me.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear our committee did their job. Okay, so just a quick overview of today. So we're going to be talking first about mindset shifts. Right, so let me just ask you for a second, when you think of negotiating, what comes to mind? How do you feel? And please shout it out. You know why I shout it out? Not just for us. I want other people in the room to have validation, because I guarantee you that other people have also experienced what you're experiencing. Nausea. Okay. Sweating. Anxiety. Doubt. Intimidation. Fear. I'm like, yes, this is great. Oh, God, this is horrible, you all. No. Right, and I think a large part that comes from, you know, it's a risk. It's a risk. And so I want to talk about mindset shifts and then how we can see if we can make you view it as a professional opportunity, so not just something to deal with, but maybe this can be good. Let's see if we're going to challenge ourselves to convince you of that. Market research. Okay, who do you ask? Where do you look? Glassdoor, fine, but we've got to come up with some other things here. Money is one thing, but money isn't everything. So talking about, well, what else can you negotiate for? It's called full compensation. We'll go into that. Then how do you make your case, right? So you know your numbers, right? But you have to be able to demonstrate that you're a top performer, and that is why you should get top dollar. It is not because you deserve it, although we know you deserve it. You have to go in there and make the case. Right? And that means looking back at your career in the last year or two. What are your accomplishments, and how do you tell them in a compelling way to make them say yes? Calming your nerves, anxiety. I can't give you a prescription for Xanax, but I can... Dr. Bauman, is he in the room? No, he's a man. He's not here. Okay. And then some scripts. So we'll go over some common scenarios if you're negotiating for a new job or negotiating at your current job, kind of the FAQs that we tend to be asked, and then dealing with something that's called the double bind. How many of you have heard of the double bind? Like, oh, good, we get to illuminate you on something that's awful that women experience, you know, and how we can deal with when men see us as aggressive, when we're actually just being assertive. And I think this kind of advice, though we're talking specifically about salary negotiation, this is about everything. It's about our workplaces, it's about our lives, and sort of how to exist as a woman in this world. So let's just talk about mindset really quickly, and we'll do questions at the end, just so you know. So this fear that you might not be liked, right? Because as girls, we're socialized largely to be people pleasers and to not disrupt. So when you're negotiating, you are taking a risk. You might be told no, but how can you do it with confidence? Should we be as afraid of rejection as we think we are, or is that in our heads? You're nodding the mic. So be careful. Whoever's nodding and smiling at me will be called on. Yeah, so Selena.
You know, I think it's all about your frame. I saw negotiations early in my career as combative and win-lose. You know, someone's going to come out of this bloodied and, you know, not feeling good. And then a light bulb went off, and I found my mantra for negotiating. Do no harm, but take no bleep. And I'm crazy about the idea that you can be hard on the problem, doggedly persistent on the problem, and soft, respectful on the person. That really appeals to me. I like that version of myself. And I think all of you can find that version of a negotiator you really like. That feels like the real, authentic you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also it's not, I think, so much what you say, but how you say it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where maybe the double bind stuff comes in, where you have to kind of smile Just a quick question for you, Mary, because we were talking a minute ago about having clients. So we're going to mostly focus on women who are full-time, but of course you're constantly negotiating as a freelancer or as a small business. So the fear that you need to underprice yourself, right, to be competitive, to get the job.
And you know, I got to say, for me, one of the biggest hurdles to get over was the fact that I had to do it. The fact that it's not a meritocracy out there, right? The fact that people aren't going to be, oh my God, you're fantastic, here's some money. Like, that was really hard for me to get over that. And when I'm selling, you know, as a business owner, I have, you know, four mouths to feed, my employees, and then two dogs, and then independent contractors. So the fear of not getting that job is really hard, even though I know I am worth it and more. And I find it, even today, I'm getting much braver, but there are times where I'll be like, oh no, I'll do it for free. You know, it's really hard to hold that price and to know what you're worth. And to know that you have to do it. And it's fear.
Yeah,
it's fear and annoyance.
Yeah, and also just remember, if you're underpricing yourself, you're basically bringing the wages down for all of us.
Yeah,
so
I'm sorry to everybody. I apologize. I'm going to stop doing it.
Yeah, and same thing sort of goes, you know, if when you're taking a client, like when I worked at New York, you know, for the New York Times, I know that if I do something for free or very low price, that's going to make it harder for the next person to negotiate. So I feel a sense of responsibility that you have to charge. Well, also, think about when you even go and get wine. Do you get the cheapest wine? It's probably something's wrong with it, right? So the second cheapest wine. So it still needs to be within our budget.
The middle
one.
Same
thing. But if you so underprice yourself, then I question, well, maybe you aren't worth that much. Also, feeling lucky to have the opportunity. I don't know, is that something you've experienced in your own life, of this, like, grateful to have any opportunity?
Yeah, but you know, I think it's, you always think about, I know when I've coached people, I've always said, when they've made that kind of comment about, I feel so fortunate, I'm like, well, what do you think a man would be thinking right now?
Right.
Because when you reframe it that way, and I hate to do that, but when you reframe it that way, and they're like, oh yeah, he'd feel like you should be getting that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, then maybe you need to reframe it in terms of how you're thinking about it. And, you know, and that goes back to what you said about our socialization of, I'm so lucky, I'm fortunate that they even thought about me, and all those kinds of things. Just reframe it in your mind about, no, you've probably done all of this work. I think that actually relates to, and we didn't talk about this, but kind of the imposter syndrome, right, that a lot of women experience. And I think that influences general negotiation, but certainly salary negotation of, I really shouldn't be there, and somehow I got there, and it was... Yeah.
Do you know what imposter syndrome is? Raise your hand if you
know. I
think
a lot of them probably do.
Oh, wow. I wish...
It's much more commonplace that now that people think about it.
I wonder if this is a room full of men. Not that I'm going to speak in a room full of men, but if I did, would they raise their hand?
If they let you, word in edgewise, right?
They paid me enough money. But would they raise their hand? So for those of you who don't know what it is, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, just the fact that you can be very highly educated, have all kinds of experiences and training, et cetera, but still wonder, how did you get there? And that you don't really feel like you belong, and that you're an imposter, and that someday they're going to catch you, right? And they're going to discover that you really shouldn't be there. And I think that's very typical there's a lot of research on this for women, particularly women, the more that they have greater education and experience and background. And I know I've coached a lot of women this way, and you're wondering, where did this come from? But it is very common. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of women who think about, well, maybe I am really lucky. But if you do some research on that, and that'll give you some good tips about how do you counter sort of the imposter syndrome, which is a whole other session.
We're actually going to get into that a little bit later when we talk about making our case. Because that's, I think, when imposter syndrome sort of rears its ugly head, is when you walk in there and actually have to demonstrate to them why you're fantastic.
Yep.
But I got to just say, and I imagine a lot of people in here are thinking, but I need this job. Mm-hmm. I am so afraid. I literally cannot lose this opportunity. And that is what stops us from negotiating. Have you heard that? And what do you say to that? I'll start with you, Selena.
Yeah, you know, sure. There's the fear that I could lose it. It's going to, you know, be off the table if I push back. In fact, it's often the opposite. People expect you to push back. It's rare that they are coming to you with, on a platter, the absolute final offer. So I would approach it with a mindset of everything is negotiable. And so, until someone gives you a sealed vault, keep going. Keep at it. Thank you so much for meeting me where you did on X. I'd like to talk about Y. Or talk a little bit about increasing, you know, this figure. The one other thing I just want to say around mindset is, remember, if you're worried about taking, you can be more of a giver if you're a good negotiator. You can be more of a giver, whether it's Johnny's tutoring that you need to pay for. If you need to conjure that in your mind, think about that. Future college savings that you're on the hook to come up with. How about the future you, who's going to retire one day and deserves to have her full worth, at that point? So rather than thinking, am I taking too much, think you can be more of a giver, not just financially, but if you move yourself up, you can give other people more opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think women worry so much about the other person and not about themselves. And so I think that's a great point. So, they worry about, did I go too far here? At first they can be confident, and then they start worrying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did I get too good of a deal? Maybe I should give the deal back, or something about that, right? And so I think I will just tell people they can take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Even if you're negotiating in a store, they're not going to let you walk out with something for free. They're going to make sure they're getting their profit. So it's okay. They can take care of themselves. But women do think that. They think, I have to worry about the other person, and we really need to worry about ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And as an employer, people come and ask me for a raise or negotiate a salary, and I have in mind what I'm going to pay them, and I never start with the bottom line. Like, I'm going to try and get a good deal, whether you're a man or a woman. And I expect people to come back. And the thing is, sometimes I'll come back, and sometimes I'll say no. The no isn't forever, but I don't think less of them. Employers aren't going to think less of you. They're not going to pull the job, right? They might say no, but no means for now, right? Or no means this. It doesn't mean you've lost any esteem in their mind. And, I think in the world, if you want to go up in career trajectory or growth, you're going to hear a lot of no's. You have to be willing to take that no and be like, okay, let me try this angle.
Right.
Good point. Right.
One thing, and I'm speaking from a very personal place, but I imagine many of you may also experience this. I have difficulty with silence. And in a negotiation, right, you put forth what you would like, right? And then I have had the experience where there's some silence and all of a sudden I find myself negotiating myself down.
Right.
And this is where you laugh, but I'm poor now because I've done these things.
Usually you take your negotiation down. Like you're like,
yes,
right.
We do.
But to your point of I want to take care of them and then I just, but wait, I can do it for less. And it's because also this fear of silence and then from that is really sort of rejection. And I don't know if you have tips at all of how to kind of sit in the silence. Maybe it's just...
That's a great point. And I think silence is like a really powerful negotiation tactic that a lot of people use. But I think you make a really good point of you have to be really comfortable. If you're really extroverted, then that's hard for you. If you're more introverted, you're probably more silent anyway, and you can handle silence. But if you're really extroverted, you really have trouble with silence. And I think you make just an excellent point of you have to be comfortable and not do exactly what you're saying, which is, I didn't really mean it. I really won't take that much. And you negotiate with yourself. So you just have to be comfortable just not saying anything and then politely looking at the person, good eye contact, and just waiting for a minute. Because eventually someone's going to talk. Why does it have to be you?
Right.
And you may have to wait for a day.
Sometimes
they'll say, I'll get back to you. Don't email them 5 minutes later and say, just let it sit.
Yeah, and I think that there's two points where that silence is so important. I think right after you make an ask of some point, for all these reasons, I'm asking for the 12% raise, and right after you hear their answer, 30 seconds, clean, clear silence, so that you're not doing what Claire talked about, but I know it's been a hard year for the company, where you start negotiating against yourself. One quick story of a woman who did this really well. She was getting ready for her performance review. She had a great year. And her boss said, on a scale of 0 to 100, how well do you feel you met your goals? And confidently, she said 115. She had a great year. And she was in sales, so she could measure it. And he said, interesting, I had you down as 95. She hung back quietly. And he began to talk himself out of his 95 and into her 115,
wow,
where they landed.
That's outstanding.
So try it. try it, especially at those two points where you feel that human urge to talk and say something and fill the void.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so funnily off of that, once when I was a freelancer, I had a client, I was in a negotiation with a potential client, and I put out a number and they said, we'll get back to you. And they did, but I didn't see it. Somehow it got filtered through my inbox. And then a few days later, I got another email from them, which now went into my regular inbox, and they had upped what they were offering me. I was like,
oh, that's great.
Well, I don't know if I could have done that tactic on my own because I'm still working on myself, but it worked, that worked. Also, you know, we're talking about salary negotiation, but don't think that you need to wait until the time that you're asking for money to have a negotiation. You're negotiating every day, all day, especially if you have kids, you're negotiating with them to get them to bed and, you know, get them to school. And also, something that I practiced, two things, and you may have heard one of these examples, is when you get a water, when you're at a restaurant or they bring you a drink and then you say, I didn't like this, I'd like another. I read that in a book somewhere. I still haven't even had the guts to send that back. But that's negotiate. Just see that something is negotiable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then one thing I have done is I fly a lot, and I have to change my flights quite frequently. And I'll call, and they tell me I have to pay a lot of money. And I tell them that I'm a small business owner. I tell them about Ladies Get Paid. It's always a woman on the other end. And they waive the fee. They do. Not all the time. But doing it once and it getting a yes, I am so encouraged to do that, and I loved in that experience, and I encourage you all to do that. See in these times in your life that you can ask for more, and you don't think you can get it, do it now. Do it now. Don't wait until there's so much pressure on you and your bank account.
And I like that. You can start with things that aren't quite as scary as a salary. And it's all about the ask, you know, how to do it, when to do it, but you have to do it, right? So I love that. Like, start off with small asks, and you'll get more comfortable with it.
Yeah, and if you are feeling uncomfortable, lean into that a little bit. That's a good time for you to ask yourself, well, why am I so uncomfortable doing this, right? So don't sort of just push those feelings away. I think you should explore.
But I think this goes back to negotiations are skills, and they're skills that you have to keep practicing. So no matter how good you are for anybody in here, you have to keep practicing. I know I just recently bought a car, and I was like, that's right, I teach negotiations, I need to practice all those things. I mean, you have to constant, and that's a great place to practice all those negotiation skills, right? Mm-hmm. Especially strategic silence. But you have to practice, and I think this is a great idea, because salary negotiations and raise negotiations are the most stressful ones you will ever do. So if you could practice on all these good examples of just small things every single day, it builds confidence, and then that means when you do have to do the salary raise, you just are used to asking.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to transition from mindset into market, the market research. So the big question is, where do I look? Okay, where do I look? And also, if I have a job title that doesn't quite match what I'm finding online, how can I figure that out? So I had a job once called Master of Ceremonies was my title, which was like, I loved at the time, but then it was, you know, time for the next job and I had to research. And it was like, I don't know where to look, but B, when I do figure out where to look, what am I even looking for? So maybe we'll just start with you, Mary. Where would you suggest people begin their market research?
So there's a lot of places. You know, luckily today you have like Glassdoor, you have all those online job seeking things, even Monster's doing some stuff. So that's the online thing. And I always find with that it's a little bit hard. I'll even go look at that in terms of when I'm hiring, you know, what are other companies paying for the positions I'm looking for? I think another way is to ask the people that you work for, right? Or work with, like ask your friends, ask your colleagues. It so varies by city, and that's the one thing about some of those sites is it doesn't really take into account, like Washington, D.C., you're going to get paid more for anything than you might in Philadelphia. So I go and I ask people in my industry about what kind of jobs, and I'm the kind of person where I'll ask you how much you pay for your house. Like, I don't care. Like, how much do the shoes cost you? Like, I will ask people. So don't be afraid to talk about money with your friends. Find people who are doing things that are similar to what you're doing and organizations that are similar and job levels and ask them what they make. That's one way I think you can do it.
I know, Selena, I wrote this down when we had a conversation. You said, what's your unadvice or don't do for tapping your network before a salary conversation?
Yeah, I do have one, and it's a mistake I made myself early in my career, and it's to talk only to people like you. Mm. So look around as you're tapping your network to say, what should a person make in X role, and ask, who am I talking to? Are they in different cities? Are there men in the mix. Yep. You know, are there different people? I was a management consultant when I did this the wrong way, and I was asking for a promotion and a raise. And so who did I talk to? My two best friends at the company in my consulting class, an African-American woman and a Chinese-American woman.
So everyone's getting underpaid.
Right. Yeah. So think of the three of us. Are we making the most competitive
Don't ask us how much we're... Well, you can ask us how much we're getting paid and then make sure you're going way above that.
Right. But that's what I used, right? And I patted myself on the back at the time and said, well, I talked about money. That was awkward enough. And I talked about money with my friends. Wasn't that a good thing? Totally off base, the number I came up with. It was a low ball figure. So push yourself, challenge yourself to ask that question of other people. If you feel weird about doing it, bring a give of your own. You know, download the salary study in your industry and say, I'd be happy to send it to you. You know, if you feel weird saying, what exactly do you make, Joyce? You know, you can say, at promotion time or at bonus time, where do you hope to land? You know, what kind of increase are you looking for this year?
Does this range reflect what you make?
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
It is.
And I think that's the key word is range, because I think many of us were looking for this sort of golden number. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, about range.
Yeah, or... I mean, I think sometimes people, they get asked, what are you currently making? What do you hope to make? And they give a specific number.
Yeah.
And I mean, I personally just think it's better to give a range and just make sure the bottom number of the range is the one you're happy with, right? Because a lot of times people look at the bottom number. But I think that giving a range shows flexibility, that you're willing to have a conversation about it. And giving an exact specific number doesn't show that you have any kind of flexibility whatsoever. So that's why I personally like doing a range. And once again, I think these are great resources. There's a lot of external market data out there. That's what you should be focusing on, not what you currently are making or what you made before or your salary history, but what would the market pay a person with your experience? And that's why you always have to think every single day, what are you worth? What's the market paying for a person in your back, you know, your experience, the external market?
And a quick add to that is take the headhunter calls. Take the headhunter calls. That's one more data point that's really now and fresh and current. And, you know, let them tell you what number they'd put on your head. Use that as part of your data.
Although, do you know that headhunters, do you all know what a headhunter is? It's a very aggressive word, hunting ahead. Right, but they're hunting for people, and they're usually making between 10 and 20% of your salary, and it is paid by the company, right? Which means the company has more money to pay you. Nothing against headhunters, but be aware that if your company is working with headhunters, they have a bigger budget, right? And they're paying somebody for the efficiency of being able to find a really good candidate. So it's just something to be aware of, but I'm gonna answer my own question about, as a master of ceremonies, what does that mean and where do I look? There's no science or formula to this, but I encourage you, if you wear the hats of many people or you have a sort of funny job title, really think about daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, what are all the things that you're doing? Can you kind of bucket them? So maybe 10% of your time is an administrator, right? Maybe 20% is, you know, project manager. And you're gonna now look at the scope of all the things that you're doing and these different categories of jobs, right? Job titles that are recognizable. So then when you look in the market, you can see, all right, well, most of my time is spent as a project manager. Part of my time is spent as an admin. I see what salaries those are, you know, contextualized by the location and industry and so on. And so then when you go in and make your case, you're able to at least say, here are all of my sources, right? Even in just the research that, you know, we're suggesting you all do, bring it in and tell them, I talked to six people, I spoke to, you know, a headhunter, right? So this is data, yes, for you, but it is also something that you can show them that I know how much I should be paid, right? And this isn't emotional, it's just data. Do you have anything else that you want to add on this before we move on?
I would just say data speaks more than feelings.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, I just feel like I've worked so hard for you and I need money for the kids and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Employers don't care about your feelings.
Nope, they don't.
They care about your data. They care about your marketability. If you're a good worker, we don't want to replace you, right? We want a good deal, but we want you to come at us with real data.
Let's talk a little bit about bottom line. So after you've done your research, it sounds like we're not picking one number, we're picking some kind of range. Is it just two numbers that we're coming in there with? And also, you recommended that you come in with a range, but and I actually agree with you, but I've heard from other women that they're concerned that if they show the range, that's kind of giving their cards away, right? You're showing the bottom that you'll take, which to your great point, it's not actually the bottom.
Yeah, line. It's not actually the bottom. Plus, I don't recommend people actually show the numbers first anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think we would probably all agree that it's better to get an offer first from somebody else rather than you giving an offer because it's possible they would have paid you more. Right. And I think you're limiting yourself by going in and saying, here's what I was looking for. I'm a big believer in deflecting salary questions until you have a written offer that has a number on it and then having the conversation about salary, because anything prior to that is you are showing your cards about a lot of things. And also, they're not necessarily interested in you. They're never interested in you until you actually have a job offer.
And then they're really interested.
Then they're really interested in you.
That's where you have power.
Then they really want you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you can start the conversation. But they've put the first number out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like make them love you, you know, make them want to marry you. And that's the point at which, you know, you have bargaining chips. The other thing I'd say is if you have to say a number, go with the highest number you can rationally defend. So I'm not saying go with what you need and we'll cover your bases and just satisfy you. I mean, really go with the highest number you can back up with some shred of evidence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talk about it being your MPP, your maximum plausible position. So it has to be based on research. I think that's a great point. It has to be, can't be just some extreme number that everybody's going to look at you and say, no, that's not going to work and I'm not interested in you anymore. It's got to be plausible, and that's based on research.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to, you know, when you go in, you should also be able to sense from the employer what their range is. Like, you don't want to go into a job where the range is too low for you, right?
Right.
So if you can find that out in some way, sometimes you can even ask, you know. But if you want to also, you don't want to waste your time if the ranges are really separate. Like, if you're going in asking for $250 and they're willing to pay you $50. Right. You don't want to waste your time.
Right, you're wasting your time as much as theirs.
Yeah.
So, it's not just about the money, though. How many of you all have heard of full compensation? Full comp? Good, good. I'm glad more and more people, I remember just 2 years ago asking that question and people didn't know what that was. So, do you want to, Joyce, do you want to define full comp?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking you're talking about like our total compensation. So you're thinking about your base salary plus anything else that you might get, which could be a signing bonus, could be thinking about performance bonus, could be equity in the company, it could be all these different perks and benefits that you might have. Wouldn't it be great to have all that stuff? But it could be all those things, right? And so you have the number for base salary, and then you have like this whole total compensation package. Like, what is it all worth to you?
Mm-hmm. Selena, do you have what would be your recommendation for when you bring full comp up?
I would prioritize and order what's most important to you and start there. So let's just say salary is your number one determinant, you know, big thing for you. I would start there and negotiate that. If down the road title is of interest to you to negotiate and maybe PTO, maybe one other smaller thing, then you can present those options. And I would do it in an appreciative way. Thanks for meeting me where I asked to be on salary. I'd be more comfortable with a PTO number like X. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that, you know, and present them? I think you want to taper those concessions you're asking for from most important to least. And I think that's kind of obvious, but you'd be surprised how many people come like at the 11th hour with a laundry list. Mm-hmm. I just want to see what I can get.
Right.
And that's not a great way to build trust.
No, that's annoying for an employer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And some of those full comp things are really valuable. Like, what if you got to work from home 3 of the 5 days a week? Mm-hmm. Do you know how much money you're going to save in clothes and travel? Like, really, like, you save money. Like, what if you have unlimited vacation, you know? That's pretty sweet. Like, I get my company has unlimited vacation. You know the secret is? Y'all never take it. So it's right. A great deal for me, right?
Right?
But, you know, so there's lots of things that can actually be very, very valuable. And depending on where you are in your life and your mm-hmm. needs. So I agree. Prioritize and think about, you know, outside things.
One thing I want to note about full compensation, you absolutely can and should get them to pay for career development for you. So how many of you all, your bosses or your companies paid for you to be here? Good. Yes, make them pay. Okay. So you might be thinking, well, you know, if they can't pay the salary that I want, then how do they have the budget mm-hmm. to pay for me to go to an expensive conference? And you all can jump in on this, but I would say my hunch is that there are separate budgets right. within the company, right? So right. they have the budget for salaries, but then they have a career development bucket. And also, you coming here and learning skills, meeting potential clients, right? This is a benefit to the company. And you're also happier at the company, and it's very expensive for companies to lose employees, right? So when we start to think that this is a favor to us, or it's taking money, or you know, you're feeling that kind of gratefulness coming up, do think about, by being here, what is the company getting? Even you meeting somebody else who now could become a potential employee for them, right? That is money. You've now become a headhunter, in a way, right? Who makes 10 to 20% of a commission. Right? So I think I would expand as we think about things we want to ask our employers for. Yes, it is for us, but if we can kind of position it as a benefit to the business, you will get a yes.
And know the numbers behind this. So let's yeah. say that you have a $5,000 a year professional development fund. You take that over $5,000 in salary. All right, so you're getting the development, just as Claire just said. But the benefits of the company, is this cheaper? Because now we're not paying payroll tax on that. We're not paying Medicare tax on that, which is, it could be 7% more. We're also not having to put that money to an IRA or 401k. So know the numbers behind your request, because if they're not going to give you this, get this, because this is actually much cheaper for them and more valuable in the long run.
Yeah, the way, and I totally agree with that. I would just say, remember, their tendency, I think, from the employer side is to try to talk to you about total compensation. And so if you're asking for base salary increases and they're saying, but look at this whole package and look at all these benefits we're giving you. And you could be a person here that doesn't really care about some of those benefits at this point in your life. So just be really careful and be firm. And I think you made a good point earlier, Selena, is you want to say, well, this is what I actually care about right now. Can we talk about that? And if it's base salary, then focus on that until you get the answer you feel like you get as far as you can. You may not get everything that you want, but you feel like you've gotten as far as you can on that before you get into the conversations about the other stuff. Because their inclination is to talk about all the other stuff right away.
That's true.
So that you can see this whole package. And that can be overwhelming. And you're like, well, yeah, okay, that all sounds good. I'm going to get all this dental insurance. And then you're like, well, I don't have any of these problems. I mean, you know. So
I have great teeth.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need those. I don't even have kids. Why do I need that stuff? You know, so I think... just think about, just be careful with that. Mm-hmm. If they want to throw all that stuff out, you can say, that's great, I really appreciate that. Now I'd really like to talk about the salary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and your future employment's going to be based on your base.
Exactly.
Let's be honest, right?
Everything.
You know, what you quote to that next employer is going to be based on that, not the dental insurance
right.
and the other, you know,
exactly.
the car you have from the company or these other perks. So not to mention your percentage of retirement. Mm-hmm. So...
Claire,
I think it's smart to be.
What's the statistic about you have to negotiate for your very first job? Because women get paid less than their very first job. And what is it? It's $250,000 over a lifetime, the difference
between
a million.
It's
worth
$1 million.
Well, if you're white, it's $500,000. If you're a woman of color, it's $1 million.
Yeah.
Either way, it's really fucking bad. We're just going to say, I'm mad.
And so when you do all this negotiating, you can't also be afraid to walk away. If
sure.
you're not getting the money that you need, or they're not even going to give you the other perks you're full of, you have to be willing to walk away.
Right.
And that feels better the more you do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really scary the first few times you say no. You know, just even being a business person and someone mm-hmm. saying, can you come speak for this?
Nope.
No. It's so scary at first. But then you kind of enjoy the self-respect you feel and have at saying, yeah, no thanks.
Mm-hmm. If they're not going to find you valuable at the beginning, they're not going to find you valuable at the end. Right, if they're not going to negotiate at all. And if they did like you, they will call you back. How many times have you had a client, you gave a price to, they said no, and they come back mm-hmm. like a year later, or 6 months later, or 3 days later?
Right.
Check your inbox. Check your inbox. And
you're
now
spam.
They come back, I'm like, my rates have gone up.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I'll pay you.
Yeah.
And also, we were talking before about saving the company money, so making the case for the, you know, positioning something as a benefit to the business, making them money. Making money is the same thing as saving them money
right.
also.
Yep.
So think about that. Any other thoughts before we move on in terms of full compensation?
No, I think we covered a lot of good stuff.
Okay, so making your case, right? So you know your numbers, you have evidence, you have a full comp package you've prioritized, but you have to talk about your accomplishments. It's not just going in there and saying, this is the number, silence, or not silence in my case. You know, you've got to kind of sell yourself. What happens if you don't know what accomplishments you could talk about, which is either you don't even know if you have accomplished, you know, I've asked women before, like, well, what are you really proud of that you've done this last year? And it breaks my heart for them to just be silent and to say, I don't know. I don't know what I've accomplished this year. On the flip side, I also have women who say, this, it's like they have so many, which is a fabulous problem to have, but it is still a problem because you can't go in there and talk about all of them. So, Selena, maybe I'll start with you. How, when you reflect back on your last year or in your career, how do you know which accomplishments you should talk about?
Yeah, you know, there's a saying I love, and it's that managers have short memories. They don't remember what you're working on, let alone where you're shining and really succeeding. Right? So it is so incumbent on you to keep that log of successes, even if it's shorthand chicken scratch. Mm-hmm. Who cares? You need to know that you got that accolade from the executive or the client is delighted with you or whatever the thing is. So keep that inventory for yourself. And then what I would suggest doing is think about what had visible impact tied to the mission and negotiate then. I think the worst thing you can do is wait till performance review time when everything's tidily, you know, decided and ask for money then or make a big request then. Do it right after you just knocked it out of the park on something that people are aware of. Mm-hmm. You have leverage.
Yeah. If you're not keeping track of your accomplishments, shame on you. Because if you're not going to keep track on them, no one else is, right? And but I love that you said managers have short memories. You want to be tracking them and just piggyback on what Selena said. It's the accomplishments, but make sure you tie to the mission and you show your results. It's not about the tons of things we did, the tons of that busy activity. You got to talk the language of money and results when you go to your boss to ask for a raise. Here's what my effort, my results, here's the value it created for the company, here's the money it saved the company, here's the visibility it got the company. You've got to try to quantify that. But really importantly, you need to be tracking, I call them stories of success, you need to be tracking them all the time. Because those stories of success, by the way, are what you're going to use when you go to your next job interview or your resume when your employer doesn't value you. You now have your list of your stories of success for your resume and your interview.
What happens if you have the kind of job where you don't really see the impact of it? Obviously, if you're in sales, it's easier, right? I mean, I assume, right, if I work for a company and I'm still employed, presumably you're making the company money, right? You're still there, which means you are affecting the bottom line, but sometimes that's not as sort of clear to you.
I think all jobs. I think if you look hard enough, you can find even the, you know, the old story about the janitor at NASA, you know, what do you do for a living? He goes, I help men go to the moon, because they all were clear about what their impact does. But I think you can measure it anyway. Maybe you can talk about some ideas for that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I always think about it in terms of responsibility for people and money. And you were talking a little bit about this. Do you have responsibility for people? Are there people who report into you? Do you train people? Do you mentor people? But responsibilities for people are things you should be highlighting, because that's pretty important. Not everybody is good at dealing with people, right? Or managing people or leading people. And then responsibilities for money. If they entrust budgets with you, that's really important. So I think almost every job, or if you're dealing with really difficult situations of really hard problems or hard clients, those are things that not everybody can do, and there should be a value attached to that. But I do love this notion of you have to keep records of this, because nobody knows your performance as well as you do. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Your peers don't, your boss doesn't, your subordinates don't, nobody knows it. So you do have to kind of keep record. And the problem, I think, for many women is we're too busy working to keep time, to take the time to record what we're doing. Right. And yet we have to do it. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. I call it a brag book. So when you get a really nice email from somebody, I take a screenshot and I put it on my desktop in a folder. I read it, but I don't feel great. But I what I'm really doing there is their testimonials. Sure. And I would recommend that you do that, and you go in, and when you negotiate, you literally go, Dan said, great job on whatever, you know, right? And so it's like, it's data. It's like, don't take my word for it. Take Dan's word for it. You know, so those, and then also be interesting for you to see how you affect other people in ways that you may not have even realized. Sure. Selena, I don't know, do you talk in your book at all about superpowers or these kind of intangibles about ourselves that impact other people that we may not even realize?
Say that again.
Okay. So something, you know, things like positivity or enthusiasm, mm-hmm. I think this maybe goes back to your point a little bit of being, mm-hmm. you know, affecting other people. In understanding yourself and your skill set, besides going to therapy, like, where do you...
No, but you know... like, what you bring.
Yeah. Well, your impact on the world and your coworkers is really right. important. And people are actually very delusional about this. So Tasha Yurick, is that how you say her name? Just has a fantastic book out on this called Insight. I highly recommend everyone get it because it's really about... You can have good emotional intelligence and have good EI, and that's all fine and well, but do you understand what your impact is on other people? And it's really an interesting read and really something to think about. She did this survey where she asked people, and something like 90% of people said, I am really self-aware, and then she tested the people around them and them, and like 15% of people were self-aware. So it's an important superpower. And can I say one more thing? You have to do a little bit of shameless self-promotion. Yeah. Right, which is not me, but it's a little bit of letting other people know, including your boss throughout the year, what you've accomplished, what you're proud of, what you and the team did. You know, men talk about their shit all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You have to too, because your boss will also hear things like, hey, I heard that Selena's a really go-getter on your team, right? So you want to make sure mm-hmm. other people also know your success.
One quick best practice for doing it that just came up in a workshop I was doing is bake it into your performance meetings. Bake it into the process. So maybe you run the performance check-ins and it's here's what I'm working on, here's what's coming down the pike, here's what's going well. What a great way to train yourself to be conversant in your own accomplishments. You're doing it every 2 weeks. It's not going to be so scary when you make a big request later. So bake it in. An executive told me, she said, whose accomplishments do you think I remember? The person who expects right. me to commit it to memory once every 6 months? Or the person who's constantly chirping in my ear, reminding yep. me, telling me, informing me?
But yeah. I think these have to be important things. Like, I don't think, like, every person who says something great about
today.
You. Yeah, sorry.
Showed up today. Right.
I think they have to be strategically important, yeah. you know, about... but I think that's a great point because it's consistency. And actually, I think any leader likes it when a person comes into their office and they're proactive yeah. because they're busy and doing a lot of other things. And so having a person that comes in that's very proactive and says, and here's all the things that I've been doing, the other things you want me to be focusing on. I mean, I think that's really helpful. And we don't often think that. We go in thinking they're going to give us something and they're going to tell us, and they're generally overwhelmed themselves. So they would be thrilled if you came in and you were somewhat proactive and you had it written down.
Yeah. And don't assume your manager knows what you've accomplished. They're busy for that, your exact point. Like half the time they've forgotten what they wore yesterday or what they're eating for lunch. You have to keep reminding them about your accomplishments because they have literally, honestly, probably forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Claire? Yes. I hate to break up this party, but we're getting a little close to lunch. Yeah. So first of all, I just want to thank all of our amazing speakers today for their insights and expertise. I was sitting there and I was like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to keep track of the time. So maybe I need to pay attention to that. So we're going to give the audience a chance to ask a few questions. So I wanted to give time for that.
Yeah, perfect.
So if you have a question, please come to the mic and we'll just take a few minutes for that to happen. In the meantime, I have a question.
Oh.
I'd love to know from each of you, maybe two or three, like, your top insights as to what you'd like to leave the audience with today. Like, your like, 2 second, what is the most important thing you'd like to leave everybody with today? So maybe, Mary, we'll start out with you.
Just do it. Make the ask. Get over the hurdle. Just do it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Some body language things. Stride the heck into the room. Stride into the room. Imagine yourself Lara Croft Tomb Raidered out if you have to, okay? Stride into the room. Take up space. Be bulky, all right? This is not the time to be economical with how much space you take up.
Power pose.
Power pose it. Use the silence and be bold. Go for it.
Yeah, I would just say it's all about preparation because preparation really builds your confidence. And confidence is what you need to be successful in negotiating. And then I would say persistence is very important. Women have a tendency to give up after the first ask, so I think you have to be persistent.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's to not feel like you're bragging when you talk about your accomplishments. You're telling a story of how you helped the company, okay? And also, if I don't know why you're great, then I can't be great with you, right? Sure. You discussing your gifts allows me to participate in your gifts. So really, it's not bragging, and that also breaks my heart when women say that either they don't know what they're great at or they do, but they're too afraid and uncomfortable to talk about it.
Right. So let's just take a couple questions. We'll start over here to the...
Hi, thank you so much.
Oh. No. Okay.
Shout it out.
Shout it out.
Thank you so much. That was really, really helpful. My question is, when you are getting a promotion and then your bosses think that the promotion itself or the title itself is reward enough, which happens in science.
Oh, for them, I'm sure it is.
What was the question?
I think you said
when the promotion is good enough, you should be glad just to get the promotion.
You should be happy that what we're giving you is so rewarding and so prestigious.
Without the money, yeah.
Yeah, that you should be happy just with the title.
I think that's a recipe for disaster, personally, to take a role with a title change and no money. If you dislike the terms now, you'll hate them later. It doesn't go the other way, where it'll grow on you. So I would make sure it's commensurate with what you're doing, and I'm assuming it's more responsibility, more action, probably more hours on your part. That deserves to be reflected in what you make.
They just gave you your exit plan. They gave you your exit title, so you go to your next job. Now you're like, I was VP.
That's literally what I was going to say. Really, either you could take it as long as you immediately start looking for other work, so you can leverage the shit out of that title to get what you want. Yeah, thank you. Good point.
Thank you. Let's take over here.
Okay, so I have two questions. I'm an executive leadership coach and team development coach. And the two questions relate to, how do you generally price for a nonprofit versus a corporate account? And when you have legacy corporate clients, how do you raise your rates? So I have new clients who know I've been doing this for 13 years, and they pay a certain level, but then I have legacy clients. So
if you're Mary Abidjan in Washington, D.C., and a nonprofit comes to me, I'm giving it up for free a lot of times. I actually do feel very strongly about giving back to my community. I'm involved in the Leadership Greater Washington program, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's for the clients that I know. If the nonprofit is large, I charge them full freight. American Red Cross has some money, people. If they're small and I want to help them, if they're not part of my giving for that year in terms of, I'll send a staff person or someone to do something, I will refer them to someone who does either nonprofits. I've really pretty much kind of gotten on that. For legacy clients, I'd be interested to see what you say. For this, it's a little bit more difficult. My legacy clients are actually some of my highest paying clients because they know the value that I bring. And they want to keep me, and they've seen the business grow, and this growing, now they're the ones who are more likely to actually pay. And you have to have an honest conversation with them.
I think you have to have the conversation because I think you have to have rationale. Sometimes people say, I want to charge more, I want more money because I feel like I should, or they just don't give reasons. So I think if you give rationale as to why the price has to go up, I think most people are business people. Yeah. They understand, what's going on in the economy and that it might cost more at this point in time. But you're right, you have to have the honest conversation.
And your bandwidth, like for me, because my business is growing and I also have a team, I will say now, so here's the thing. If you want me, it's going to be this much because I'm in a lot of demand right now. And I try to say that as politely, but I am. But I can give you one of my amazing team members for this much. And you know what they usually say?
I'll take the team member.
There you go. Or they'll say, no, I want you. And then I'm like, shit, now I gotta do the work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Let's go back over here real quick.
Hi, my name's Denine, and I'm a senior in college right now. So I was just kind of wondering, as I start to get ready to join the workforce, how do you even approach the negotiation process? Like, the employer, when they, give you a job offer, is it going to be like, okay, now let's negotiate? Like, when is the right time to start that?
So, congratulations, you're a senior, so you're job hunting, I assume. You're going to just get offers, right? And so you're going to get the offers, and depending on what your field is, you have more or less room to negotiate. Obviously, the higher up you are in a company, the more room you have and the more kinds of things you can negotiate for. For starting out, you don't have quite as much opportunity in terms of base salary and other things, but you still have some. And so I think that, once again, you just want to look at what the market is. You also have to, sometimes your college doesn't necessarily want you to negotiate. I don't personally subscribe to that. I think it's important for you to at least ask all the questions that you can to better to understand your offer. Because sometimes there's things in your offer that you just don't even understand. And so how are they going to calculate this performance bonus? And most people just take the jobs and have no clue how some of this stuff is. So you could talk to the HR person and say, can you just walk me through how all this is structured? You don't have to say, I like it, I don't like it, anything. Just say, I just want to understand it. Right? But you need some market data, and your best leverage is another offer. You need to have multiple offers in a short window of time so that you have things to really look at compared to each other.
Great. So we have time for one more question. Yep. I'm so sorry for all those that stand in line. That stinks. So we'll take your thank you.
Hi, Watonia Evans. My question is, how do you avoid getting paid based on where you are now, right? Because you're not supposed to say where you're at. You know, you want to be paid for the job, you know, as the you want to be paid for the role, but oftentimes you are pressured into saying what your salary is. And then when you do get that offer, it's like, well, look how far we brought you, even though it's not necessarily at the market level that you should be at.
I think there's plenty of people who aren't making today what they should be making for what they contribute. So I wouldn't be too married and wed to your current salary today. But I would try to get some objective data about what it is you're contributing and what the number should be on that. You know, just like you would a normal salary research project, you would get out there and try to put a number to what you're contributing and what you're doing. Quantify anything you can, efficiencies you've created, new partnerships you've brought in, happy clients, whatever it may be. And I think if anything, you're gonna have to pull away from your current company's view of you and get more impartial data. That's when I'd get the headhunter input and some of that information so you can up-level yourself.
Mm-hmm. Just one thing off of that, it's, I think, going to be very useful for everybody to look at your original job description when you first joined and then write a new one for yourself of what you've actually done. And you may find that it's radically different in scope. So what you were paid before was contingent on you not having had all those experiences and skills that you've since gained. You know, so it may have had nothing to do with what you're being, what you're asking for now. So even just to show the discrepancy in what you originally offered, salary-wise and description-wise, look how far you've gone. And that should be commensurate with the market data. So sometimes even just having the pieces of paper of the original job description and the new one, again, it makes it as objective, I think, as possible to rationalizing this new salary that's not contingent on the one that you originally were offered.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks
again, always. And I just want to give a couple quick announcements. Certainly thanks to everybody for being here today and hearing these amazing women. Mary is going to be in the exhibit hall signing her book, Managing Up. So if you want to go over there and get her book, she will be there to sign it, and that's super exciting. And make sure that not only are you enjoying lunch, but you're checking the app and you're looking in your swag bags. There's a chance to win an iPad in your swag bag. So if you look at the pop socket, you can enter in to win an iPad. So don't miss that opportunity. Have a great lunch and a great afternoon.